This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now, the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show. From Wintergreen Nursery Landscaping and Florist, here's the Commissioner of Dirt, Mike Winters, and the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
There, he's done. I was going to jump on him a couple of times there. I was just ready to get out of the gate, I guess, this afternoon.
Yeah, well, we should have interrupted Lars then.
Oh, well, okay.
That would have been bad, huh?
Mm-hmm. Kyle wouldn't appreciate it.
No, I hope he's not listening.
He's out giving away ice cream at the moment.
You know, they never come to Winston and give me ice cream. You know, I have already filed a complaint.
Have you?
Yes.
Well, good.
Yes.
We'll see how far that goes. All right, this is the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show. Yeah. News Radio 1240 KQEN. And, Mike, you got an intro.
I got an intro. Yeah, well, I want to thank you all for listening, if you are. And if you have questions, please ask. And if you want to know the phone number, it's 673-4464. And this show basically is educational in that I try to share my experience of 46 years in this business of, you know, what's good, what's not, how to do it, how not to do it. And, you know, all the requirements for shrubs, trees, you know, the types of trees, the types of shrubs, the types of soil, blah, 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 you know, on and on. It's a never-ending learning process, even for me, even after I've been in it all these years. But if you do have that question, even though I might be speaking about something totally unrelated to your question, it's okay. You can interrupt. And 673-4464.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, I was listening to Kyle and Ashley this morning.
Oh, yeah?
And Ashley says, or Kyle says, did you ever call the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show and ask your question? She says, oh, no, I forgot. And, you know, blah, blah, blah. And she says, well, I got these super weeds growing in my my yard, and I can't get rid of them, and I don't know what to do with them.
Can you hold that thought? We got a phone call. Sorry.
Yeah, right.
You're giving me the evil eye there. Afternoon, you're on with Mike Winters.
Yeah, I got a quick question.
Yeah.
My honeysuckle had bloomed and everything, and now I've got like yellow leaves. And I don't know if it's because I've overwatered it, I fertilized it and everything, but I'm not really sure what's going on.
Well, how often do you water it and how much?
Well, I've got a drip, so, you know, maybe once a week, a week.
Oh, that's all? And it's a drip, huh? You could probably, I doubt if you're overwatering it. What you want to do is reach down into the soil at the base of the plant and, you know, maybe 4 or 5 inches. And if it's damp, it's okay. If it's bone dry, you've got your answer. If it's saturated wet, you've got your answer too. If it's saturated wet, cut back on the watering. If it's bone dry, bump it up. And are all the leaves turning yellow?
A lot of them are,
Yeah.
And so I've been pulling them off because I didn't know.
That's good. That's
spray it or cut it back. But it was after it bloomed.
How old is this plant?
Well, it kind of got moved around because we had some new cement poured a couple of years ago. But it was originally probably about 7, 8 years old, but then I had to cut it all back and then it came back up. But I mean, it's, you know, full growth and everything like that all over the trellis and things. So.
Yeah. No problem with it last year?
No.
And you're not doing anything different?
No, except I just have a second drip next to it, so that's why I didn't know if maybe I was doing too much, but I'll double-check the moisture on that.
Yeah, well, how far away is it from the concrete?
Probably like 10 inches.
10 inches, and this is brand-new concrete, like within the last year?
No, probably 5 years.
Oh, okay, because sometimes concrete has a detrimental effect because it's so alkaline on plants like that. Yeah. Well, just check the soil moisture, and if it feels damp, it's good. You know, I mean, 6 inches down, just gonna dig around there on a couple sides of it and see what's happening. You don't see any bugs on it, do you?
It's got spots on it, so that's why I didn't know whether or not I needed to spray it. I thought maybe I would because the reason I hadn't been watering it as much is just because the temperature's been mild. And, you know, I soak it pretty good for about 45 minutes.
Sure.
So, and it's got bark molds and stuff on top.
Yeah, it might be too wet because they're a really tough plant. And normally they can survive drought conditions and everything else. So do the soil moisture test and check it first and see what's happening. You might have to adjust it one way or another, but and you said you fertilized it?
Yeah.
With what?
Well, just lately it was the Miracle-Gro.
Okay, so you mixed it with water and poured it in, right? The Miracle-Gro?
Right.
Okay. How much did you put on, do you think?
Well, it was in the sprayer type of deal. You know, I was just doing my other plants and things like that with it.
Uh-huh. So you don't do it in a bucket and pour like a half a gallon on it or something like that?
No.
Okay. Well, maybe you need to strengthen the Miracle-Gro too, and give it at least a quart directly down into the root mass.
Oh, okay.
And generate new growth that way too.
Okay. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Well, if you have results, call back next week and let me know, will you?
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
All right, let's continue with Ashley's story.
Oh, yeah. Ashley had these weeds she couldn't get rid of, and Kyle said, well, what do they look like? And she said, oh, they're like little pine trees, you know? I mean, and if it is what I'm thinking of, it's called infertile horsetail. And those are the hardest stinking weeds to get rid of.
Infertile?
Infertile horsetail. Because it looks like a little pine tree. It goes straight up, and all the leaves are like needles, and, you know, like pine needles.
Mm-hmm.
And to the uneducated eye, it would look like a little pine tree.
Sure.
But they grow in about a day and a half.
Whoa.
You know, I mean, they're quick. And I had them in my field for a few years trying to get rid of them. And finally, I sprayed them with crossbow, and that knocked them out.
Ah.
And crossbow will knock them out. You just have to be careful you don't get in, you know, get it on all your other plants, but just, you know, be specific on crossbow. So if she's listening, hopefully she'll get some crossbow and squirt it on those puppies, and you might have to do it once a week until they're all gone.
Mm.
But they just keep popping up, man. I mean, and you can't pull them. We tried to pull them, and first time we went through, we hoed them with big hose and thought, well, that takes care of that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, it didn't, because they just popped back up within a couple of weeks.
Stubborn.
And, yeah. Oh, yeah. They're deadly. And so that's when we sprayed them. No, we tried to pull them too, but you can't pull them because the root will break off. The root is, I don't know, it's really strong. It just holds it. And if you don't get the root, you don't get the plant.
Yeah. It's,
so the crossbow is the answer. That was the only thing I found to be effective.
They can't fight.
No, they can't fight. They die. They die.
There you go, Ashley. Crossbow.
Hopefully you heard that, Ashley.
Infertile horsetail.
Yeah. Yeah. Infertile horsetail. Mm. Yeah. Crazy.
I'd never heard of those. Bobby seen them, but never.
Oh, yeah. You probably thought they were little pine trees.
Oh, those are nice.
Yeah. And I had like 7 acres of them.
Oh,
you know?
My gosh.
Yeah, it took me a while to get rid of them. It took me 2 years, really, to get rid of them. You know, all the treatments I did, and I tried this, and I tried that, and I tried that, and finally I tried crossbow, and it worked.
Nice.
So I haven't had them for a long time.
I wonder if Roundup would do the same thing.
Nope. I tried it.
It didn't.
No. Yeah, I mean, temporarily it killed it, but a new plant replaced the old dead one.
So they're not as infertile as their name refers.
Yeah. Yeah. They're not infertile. Well, anyway, in the past two shows, I've been kind of writing about large shade trees and that will grow fast and provide, you know, maximum shade for summertime enjoyment and all that kind of stuff. However, small yards can't handle a huge tree. So what do you do for a shade tree? Huh? Good question, right? That's what I thought. And but there are hundreds, literally hundreds, maybe even thousands. I didn't count them all. I didn't have the time. But there are hundreds of medium and small sized trees that will fit well in a small front yard or, you know, a backyard. And these trees will not grow as fast, but in time, they will cool your yard and home. It just takes a little bit. And like the maples I talked about, the oaks I talked about, you know, they get 80 to 120 feet tall. And in a small yard, it would be disaster.
Oh, yeah.
But
absolutely.
If you had a big yard, it'd be, you know,
that'd
maybe
be perfect.
Half an acre or something like that, where you get it away from the house aways and all that kind of stuff. But it doesn't work in a – there's so many – as you drive around Roseburg, there's – you know, the yards are small.
Mm-hmm.
You know, out there, we're in Kyle's neighborhood, there's not large yards. And he's got this gigantic maple tree in his backyard. He didn't plant it, but it's been there. It's like, Oh, I'll bet you 70 feet tall.
Jeez, that's 60, a big one.
Oh, yeah. And about 3 foot, 3.5 foot diameter trunk. And he's had it pruned before, but yeah. It's destined to do damage one of these days, either to his neighbor or to him. You know, I mean, because if it fell in any direction, it's going to crush something, period.
That's not
and
good.
It kind of leans anyway. And I recommended to him, I said, well, prune it. And but when the tree surgeon came over, I don't know who he used. Yeah. They had to climb up and, you know, and horse it down by ropes and all that kind of stuff. They didn't prune it deep enough. They didn't bring it down far enough. I would have brought it down about 50% and, you know, just kind of let it stay there because that way the majority of the weight and the leaner, they see it went, the trunk was straight, but it went way to the top and leaned over. And I thought, that's a disaster waiting to happen.
Yeah.
So that's not the kind of tree you want in your backyard if it's a small backyard.
Turn it into firewood.
Yeah, turn it into firewood or make a cabinet out of it or something. Yeah. But anyway, on the medium-sized trees, and those that get, say, anywhere from 25 to, say, 35 feet, you know, that would be... And 35 feet might be a little bit extreme, but it would take a lot of years to get to 35 feet if it ever did. But at any rate, it's a deal where you want to see what's available out there. And there are really, like I said, there's hundreds of them out there to choose from. And you need to take a look and ask questions or get on the internet and see what their size is, their color is, their shape is, and all that kind of stuff. But one thing I want to start with the flowering trees, and they reach a maximum of about 25 feet tall and almost that wide. And if your backyard, say, is only 30 feet deep and 20 feet wide, you know, you want to choose a smaller tree like a flowering cherry. And there are like, a lot of varieties of flowering cherry to choose from.
Yeah.
Now, my all-time favorite is the Kwanzaa flowering cherry. Kwanzaa. Kwanzaa. It's obviously an oriental tree.
Oh.
And, but it has no fruit, but lots of spring flowers, and they're hot pink. They're a beautiful, beautiful tree.
Nice.
Yeah, lots of them. I mean, when it's in bloom, it's just the most gorgeous tree on the street. And it's a nice tree for its shape, for its color, and it's for its size. And it's not going to grow 90 miles an hour. It's going to grow, at a medium rate, if you will, and maybe a couple of feet a year,
or
18 inches a year. But what it does, it will give you that shade. Let's say you got a patio out back, and you like to sit on a patio, but it's a west-facing or south-facing patio. Mm-hmm. You want some shade. You want to have it a little bit cooler to make it a little more pleasant, because otherwise you go out there after the sun sets, and you're sitting in the dark.
Gonna roast.
Well, which is good. Yeah, I mean, after the sun goes down.
Oh, yeah. Love it.
But the branches are like upright. But they're not a columnar tree. It's not like a poplar or something that goes straight up in the air. But they're kind of an upright branching, and has a nice rounded look to it. And the flowers, like I say, are double rosy pink. And they come in clusters. You know, it's not just a single flower here and a single flower there. But when they bloom out, I mean, there might be 7-8 flowers in one cluster. So that's what makes it so beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, and the whole tree is looking like that. You've got a very, very pretty tree. And then the blooms, they come on first. You know, the tree is bare. It's winter or early spring. No leaves, nothing. And all of a sudden, all the flowers pop out. And so it's just in full bloom. It's beautiful. And then as the flowers fade, which might be 2 or 3 weeks, that's when the leaves pop out after the flowers are fading and starting to drop. So the leaves come on. And in the fall, these leaves, they're green, kind of greenish, you know, light green all summer long. But in the fall, they turn like a deep bronzy red.
Oh, wow.
And especially if there's like in October, say you get a cold snap where it drops down into the high 20s or something for a couple of days, that's what really makes the leaves turn color. the extreme cold. Now, you know, 40, they're okay. You know, if it's 40 degrees at night or 39 degrees at night in October.
They don't
whatever.
Mind that.
No, well, I mean, they're turning, but they're slow and they're still, you know, and the color's not as bright. But you get a good cold snap and, I mean, boom, it's like they were painted, you know. And but it's a good tree. And then my second choice of a flower.
Can we hold on to the second choice?
I have to. Yes.
We'll be back.
I was on a roll, you know.
No, the second choice. The first number one.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we'll be back with more Mike Winters.
The second number one.
That didn't make any sense. I know. It's the heat. More of Mike Winters' Garden Show coming up. News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Well, we're back, obviously. Mike Winters, Lawn and Garden Show, News Radio 1240 KQEN. And Albert, get well soon.
Yeah, Albert, I don't even know if you listen to our show, but you should.
Yeah.
But I was talking about medium-sized shade trees and the types of medium-sized trees that you get if you had a small yard, but you needed some shade because you didn't have any shade. About the Kwanzaa flowering cherry was my first choice.
Mm-hmm.
And then my second choice is the Mount Fuji flowering cherry.
Fuji.
The Kwanzaa is that hot, bright pink. Now, the flowers on the Mount Fuji are white as snow, and they also hang in clusters. It's a real early bloomer. And blooms about 10 days to 2 weeks before the Kwanzaa blooms.
Oh,
yeah. So,
so it coordinates.
So you could have a Mount Fuji over here and a Kwanzaa in the middle and have another Mount Fuji on the outside. Or
and a Mount St. Helens over there.
Yeah, so it could blow up and blow ash on them.
Yeah.
But this Mount Fuji, is its branching pattern is like more horizontal than upright. And but it's a good all color tree as well. I mean, it's just really, really nice, and it has good fall color on the leaves and stuff like that. And with at my place, well, I'll talk about that a little later here. There's one more here that I wanted to share with you. It's called the Taiwan cherry, and this is more of a slender, upright type growing tree. It doesn't spread, but it's very densely branched, and the flowers like are a single bell-shaped flower that's a bright purplish pink, and it's not. I wouldn't put it in the great shade category where the first two I talked about. It's going to provide some shade. It's going to be nice for you.
Mm-hmm.
This one is would provide some shade. And you could have it in conjunction with two of the others, and it would be perfect. But again, it would fit in a small yard, and this is what we're talking about. How you want shade, but your yard's too small, and you don't want to buy a maple or an oak because it's going to crush your house one of those days, you know, that kind of thing. But with any type of cherry, a fruiting cherry or a flowering cherry, the drainage has to be good. They don't like wet feet. I think my first cherry tree, I don't know, I don't remember if it was a flowering one or a fruiting one, and I watered it way too much. You know, I was watering it. I had an apple and a pear and this cherry.
Yeah.
And I kept thinking, what the heck? And like that lady that called earlier said the leaves were turning yellow.
Yeah.
Well, that's what was happening to this. So finally, you know, I got a clue and dug down. I thought, I can't be overwatering this. It was wet, man. It was really wet.
Wow.
So I quit watering it and recovered, and it was beautiful.
So you didn't have to?
I just felt down there, and I thought, you know, it's saturated. What am I doing? You know, forget that.
Wow.
And so flowering cherries are the same way.
Mm.
Any kind of a cherry, it seems, does not want to have wet roots. It just doesn't help it at all. So you want to make sure if you do one of these flowering cherries, mm-hmm. that the drainage has to be good. You know, it has to be positive. You know, no hard pan clay material is going to work. If you dig a hole in a clay mm-hmm. soil, stick this tree in and put the chunks of it ain't going to work. You're wasting your time, effort, and energy and money, etc. So once these guys are planted, after about 2 years in the ground, they don't take very much care at all. I haven't watered my flowering cherries at my place in 15 years.
Is that right?
Right.
Oh, boy. And that's my kind of tree.
I know. And the first year I did. And the second year I did a little bit more. Uh-huh. After that, I said, hey, you're on your own. You either make it or you don't. And that way I could see how they would react. And they did wonderfully. And they're absolutely gorgeous, gorgeous trees.
So they like this climate.
Yeah. You just keep them moist but not soaked, and they're going to grow nicely. Now, as I was doing my research, I came across 24 varieties listed in the Sunset Western Garden Book of flowering cherries. And I don't want to write just about flowering cherries the whole time. But in my field, at my place, I guess it's maybe 400 feet up the field from my house, yeah. I planted three flowering cherries on a pitcher's mound. And when my kids were small, I had a baseball field out there. Ah. And anyway, I enlarged the pitcher's mound a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I planted these three trees in a very tight group. I wouldn't do this in somebody's yard, but I wanted to do it in mine I wanted to see how the colors would mesh and grow together and be displayed. And they're probably 8 feet apart. Not much, you know, maybe 9 feet.
They're social distancing.
Yeah, very socially distanced. Distance your social trees, yes. Well, but the reason I planted them tight was I wanted to see this mass of flowers. So I planted one of these Mount Fuji, which are white, and then I flanked it with two Kwanson, which are pink, and the display of color is like stunning. I mean, it's absolutely outrageous. The Kwanson are taller at this time. They're all the same size when I put them in. And the Kwanson are probably, maybe 5 or 6 feet taller. But the Mount Fuji is wider. And, like I say, the branches go more horizontally, and the Kwanson grows more upright.
Upright.
Yeah. And so even though the Mount Fuji blooms first, within a week or so, maybe 10 days, the Kwanson are in full bloom. So I got this tree in the front with full of white blooms, and two of them the pink ones in the background, 8 feet apart, you know, that are taller, full of these pink blossoms. Mm. And it's really, really
it's
really cool.
Combination.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's a great combination. And you could do that in your yard, I guess, but you'd have to keep them pruned in a regular size yard. I got acres and acres and acres, so it doesn't.
They do.
They can spread all over the place, and it's not going to hurt.
Let your hair down.
Yeah. And like I say, the Mount Fuji is out there. Uh-huh. It's blooming and looking good. And then I'm eyeballing the Kwanson. What's the matter? What's the matter? Well, there's nothing to matter. They're just 2 weeks behind. And I get about 6 weeks of blooming out of these three trees. Yeah.
That's half of the summer.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they bloom clear into April. They start early March and they're blooming clear into April. So,
nice.
And of course, that depends on the weather. If it, we got to, even in, if it's cold, they're still blooming. But if it snowed, it would kind of slow that blooming process.
Change your
down.
Mind.
Yeah, yeah. it's too early, man. Let's get out of here. But all the branches are mingled together. And so from a distance, they look like one big tree with two different colors. All the branches are intermingled through one another,
right.
So you see both colors at the same time, and like I say, it blooms at least a month, if not 6 weeks. And like I said, I never water them, and they're like 20 years old right now, somewhere in there.
So they're just young and jet.
Yeah, they're just they got another 100 years to go. Oh, gosh. Now, these guys can be a very nice, easy, small shade tree for the small yard. I mean, this is, you wouldn't need three, but if you had one and your yard was rather small, that one would provide afternoon shade for you. Plant it on, you know, if your patio is on the facing west, put it on the west side. If it's south, put it on the south side. Just you want to maximize your shade so that you know, it's effective for you. And if you got a deck, you want to have it a little bit cooler. In June and July and August. You know, plant something like this. It's good. Now, there are other kinds of flowering chairs to consider. They're a little bit different, a little bit faster, a little bit more robust, if you will. Mm. And those are the flowering plums. Now, those are the guys spring. You'll see these pink blooming trees all over Douglas County. Yeah. I mean, every block has a dozen of them, it seems, you know. And they even grow wild in the fields, for crying out loud.
They do.
Yeah. Well, they grow faster than the cherries, and the flowers range, like I say, from light pink to a darker pink.
Yeah.
And the leaves are usually burgundy in color when the blooms drop off. You know, the leaves themselves are kind of a deep red kind of color. So it's a pretty tree year round in that respect. But like I said, they grow faster and they need a little more trimming and shaping over the years to kind of keep them in bounds so they do, you know, the trick that you want them to do.
Yeah.
And size-wise, they can range anywhere from 20 to 40 feet tall. And
that's not too bad, actually.
Yeah. No, it isn't. Yeah. And that kind of a tree will fit in a smaller yard.
Yeah.
You could have it in the front yard, backyard, whatever. Yeah. Just you know, to decorate or to shade or, you know, do both. And like I said, flowering plums are going to need a little more pruning when they're young to shape the tree for the future. In other words, when you get a tree that's, say, 7 or 8 feet tall, you buy it 7, 8 feet tall, first thing you want to do is take about 6, 8 inches off the top. Just clip those top branches and force the growth lower so when it's growing, it has more side growth. And then each year kind of trim it down a little bit. And not a lot, maybe, again, 6, 8 inches, maybe more, but you have to gauge the rate of growth for your tree. And as you get more experience at the trimming part and you see how the tree fits in the yard, you get the idea, okay, this is what I have to do. And mm-hmm. if you do that, you know, at least every other year, you're going to have a nice-looking tree. It's not going to be a hazard.
Yeah,
it's not going to be a hazard to your deck, patio, or your house or anything like that. You don't want it real close. You want it out at least, excuse me, at least 15 feet away from a structure so that it doesn't
interfere
or crash on your on your roof or something like that. But it's a nice tree, and then the a smaller variety of the same kind of look is a flowering plum called the Purple Pony flowering plum.
Purple Pony,
and it only grows to about 12 feet, and about 12 feet tall, about 12 feet wide,
uh-huh.
And it's nice. It's not going to provide you a whole lot of shade, but it's going to any tree is going to give you a little bit more coolness and a little bit more shade, no matter what kind of tree it is. Even if it's a 4-footer, you can climb under it and lay on the ground and you're in the shade, right?
Sleep under it,
yeah. And this tree is termed as a semi-dwarf because it only gets to about 12
feet. Can we say that on the radio?
Semi-dwarf? I just did. Yeah. I'll say it again, too. And it blooms like a single pale pink flower, and the leaves are purple all the way through the growing season. And like I say, this is a tree for the tinier yard. So mm-hmm. We got a break?
Yes, we do.
Hit scissors.
Yep, here we go. 2 minutes, we'll be back. Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Beautiful day in the valley with 81 degrees.
Out in the parking lot is 64.
Yeah. Now we're going to play this back in mid-October sometime.
Yeah, we will. Anyway, I've been talking about medium-sized shade trees and for the small yard, and I've been into flowering plums here. And like I said earlier, they can be a nice shade, but you need to give them room to grow and fully develop, even though you might be trimming them and pruning them and keeping them, you know, the size you want. But you want to plant them no closer than like 15 feet from a house. That'd be pretty close. And so that it's not going to be over the roof in 10 years because you forgot to prune it 3 years in a row. And hanging over the roof, and remember the branches break. They, I mean, naturally break, or snow gets on them like Snowmageddon and breaks and hits your roof and damages your roof and all that kind of stuff. And if it's too close to the house, the leaves, when they fall off, they get into the rain gutters.
And they
plug up the downspouts. And, you know, and
it's a chain reaction.
Yeah, it is. And so you want to give them room. And next to a deck or a patio is fine, but at least 5 feet away from them, so you don't have any root problems messing with your concrete or something
septic,
like that.
Whatever.
Yeah, septic in town? I don't think so.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think they have septic tanks in town.
Well, you never know. The next medium-sized trees I'm going to talk about are fruit trees. And you go, how can a fruit tree be a shade tree? Easy, it's got leaves and branches, okay? it's not rocket science here. But fruit trees not only can give you a little bit of shade, but it gives you something to eat as well. And it blooms in the spring. So, hey, they are perfect for a small yard. And I would stick to, like, apple trees or Asian pears, because they will need less care than, say, other types of fruit trees. And like I said, they give you shade. With a cherry tree, that might work too, but it might be too wet, and you might have problems with it. Whereas an apple or an Asian pear, for crying out loud, it seems like it can grow out of concrete. I mean, they're that tough. And a peach tree is a hassle. I like peaches. I'll eat them if... and Freddy's has them on sale or whatever. I'll eat them because my wife brings them home and all that kind of stuff. But they're harder to grow than apples. I mean, you can stick an apple tree out there in a sand dune and that puppy's going to grow and bear fruit. I've got some apple trees planted way down my field. I don't think I've watered them yet this year, and they're loaded with apples. I've got some way up on a ridge that my son planted a few years ago. They are loaded with apples, and they're in the midst of they're in the middle of a madrone forest. They get very little sun, but are on the south slope, so they get filtered sun, and they're loaded with apples. Of course, got a little bit of deer damage on those, but other than that, they've not been watered, and I don't know. Maybe I fertilized them once several years ago because, you know, they're almost a quarter mile from the house, for crying out loud. But that's how tough they are. And, yeah, and they will provide you shade. And if you keep them pruned and shaped, you get the best of both worlds that way. And it's fruit, it's flowers, it's shade. It's perfect, okay? Now, go on to dogwood trees. Dogwoods, you know, we've got our native dogwoods around here, and they do really, really good. They're a slow-growing tree, but in time, they too will provide shade. I've got some up one of my slopes that are, you know, gosh, 35 feet tall, 30, 35 feet tall maybe, and they're almost in full shade. And then I've got some that are grown in the sun that... are almost as big, and they get sun all the time. So they're very versatile in that where you can plant them. They still grow no matter what, and they bloom beautifully. Big white flowers like our native dogwood, the Pacific dogwood, that you find naturally growing all over our hillsides up the North Umpqua and Dillard, wherever. Mm-hmm. And they do well. And they're not going to be a heavy-duty shade like, again, the larger maples or the oaks, that kind of thing. But it's something. And, of course, you have the flowers in the spring, and then you got this brilliant fall color with leaves that are like red to burgundy in color. And again, the colder it gets while the leaves are on, the leaves turn a brighter, deeper color, no matter what color
they
are.
It's like they're SOS.
Yeah, help. Help. And but most any dogwood's going to grow in Douglas County. And there are, 40, 50 varieties of dogwood.
Yeah, I've seen them all over.
Yeah, you know, but when they list them in the book and they go, this one, you know, this one is native to the East Coast and this one is native to the South and this one does this and this one does that. And they all come in different sizes, shapes, and colors, and some of them are variegated leaves. You know, they'll have a deep green a leaf, like a tricolor dogwood has a deep green outer part of the margin of the leaf, and then the middle of it's kind of a light cream colored green. Really attractive tree, and you know, nice white flowers, and they'll probably bloom in about a month, you know, depending on the weather again. If it's a normal spring with you know, without a snowmageddon event or something like that, they do pretty well. And then in the fall colors are absolutely gorgeous, and you don't need shade in November, December, January, February, March, so don't sweat the program. It'll be a bare tree, but it's they're pretty. Now, most, like I said, most any dogwood's going to grow in Douglas County as long as it's planted in good draining soil. You've heard me say that a time or two, you know, with a lot of organic material mixed in. And when I say organic material, I'm talking about, you know, some old bark mulch mixed in, or old sawdust, or peat moss, or compost that you've made over the years from leaves and grass clippings, that kind of stuff, so that you have about at least a 30-70 mix, or a 50-50 mix, so, you know, you can't, when you're done mixing it, you can't tell what's soil and what's compost. Yeah. It's all blended very well together, and they love that kind of situation. Same thing for roadies, actually anything you plant. If you give it that kind of a base and from which to root, they root quickly.
It's going to love it.
Yeah, it's going to love it, and it's going to grow well, and it's not going to be overwatered because it's going to be good drainage because that stuff drains so well. And but the flowers in dogwoods, they range from white, pink, and red. And we've had different types at the nursery, you know, usually 3 or 4 different types, maybe 5 different types. And, you know, some of them grow tall, some of them only get about 12, 15 feet.
About right for a smaller yard.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. It's a matter of, you know, how much shade does it really put out? Yeah. Well, in time it will, and it won't be like I say overpowering, but it'll be something.
Right.
And any bit of shade you have cools your place off, your yard off. I mean, that's all there is to it. It's better than sitting out there and trying to stare at the sun.
<You know? laughs> Going blind,
baby. But the one we have here that's native to Oregon is called the Pacific Dogwood, and its flowers are large and white. And you can find them, you know, in the hills around town. You can find them in people's yards. You can find them up the North Umpqua, clear up into, probably almost to Diamond Lake. I mean, at the where you're at Tokadee and you go up that last 5 or 6 miles, there's still white dogwoods blooming along the side.
Well,
of the
road. They got a big range.
Oh yeah, they do, and they grow on the coast as well, you know, and in the Coast Range.
They like the cooler.
Yeah, they do. They like the cooler. They like the they like the rain, you know, because it's natural, and you know, and they're very, very hardy. Once they're established, and it's not hard to establish one, and like I say, they need little care. The only problem I have with them at my house is when the deer munch on them and rub their stupid antlers on the trunk and try to rip the tree out of the ground. But you know, dogwoods, they grow in clear cuts in the full sun. You know, I've got some old above the nursery there. There's a bunch of hills. They're not mountains, but they're hills up about, you know, 1,000 feet up above me. And 1 year I was looking at an old clear cut, and it's got some brush and a few trees coming up. I'm looking up there one day and I thought, wow, what is that? There was this white tree, just huge white tree in the middle of a clear cut. And I thought, what in the heck is that? And it's on a west aspect. In other words, it gets the sun in June till 9:30 or something. You know? I mean, it's hot up there all the time. And I know the soil is not topsoil. It's rocky, steep mountain soil. And that thing blooms every year. It comes back every year. Wow. It's gorgeous. Nobody waters it. Nobody fertilizes it. Nobody prunes it. But it's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's and I only say that to point out how tough they really are.
Right.
You know.
Right.
You, yeah. Don't baby these things. You know.
They'll die.
Yeah. They will. They will. My botany professor in college told me, he says, they don't grow because of us. They grow in spite of us. And I went, oh, yeah, what's that, right? Well, I learned he was correct over the years.
Speaking of which, we have a pesky break here.
Break? Okay, let's break.
All right. We're breaking. We'll be back. 2 minutes. Mike Winters, Lawn and Garden Show on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Hanging in there with 82 degrees now, Mike, so we're getting up there.
Well, probably about 66 in my car right now, my pickup, yeah. Anyway, I've been talking about dogwoods for shade trees here, and there's just a whole range of dogwoods from size to color to, thickness of leaves and all that kind of stuff. But the flowers always range from like whites and pinks and reds, and like I said, the native to the to Oregon is the Pacific dogwood, and its flowers are large and white, and mm-hmm. they're beautiful, nice tree, and like I said, hardy. You don't have to mess with them. You don't have to do anything, and they grow in clear cuts in full sun, and also in shade from sea level to around 5,000 feet, and so the range is good. Mm-hmm. They're natural. They're native. Anytime we can get, when we buy dogwoods from growers, we always get the native dogwoods. I mean, because they seem to be the nicest, the straightest, the better blooming, and you know, it's good.
Yeah.
And these now, the Pacific dogwood, they can grow 50 feet tall. But it takes 50 years to get there, so it's not like you have to sweat the program. Yeah. You're going to fall on the house and crush you on the patio.
So we don't have to worry about
that. No, we don't have to worry about it. But but so if you plant one when your first child is born, they will reap the shade when they're about 18.
Then kick you out of the house.
And then say, hey, I didn't like that tree. I'm going to cut it down, Dad.
Yeah.
But again, no special care, very little water, occasional fertilizing the first year or two, and that's it. They are not weak, wimpy trees. Okay, I counted 39 varieties in my Western Garden book of dogwoods.
39?
39 varieties, yeah.
Yeah.
And you go, what do you mean 39? So, and like I said, what? Some are native to the West Coast, East Coast, you know.
But they're all basically the same.
Well, except in their leaf shape or the color of the flower or the number of flowers.
Kind of like a Ford and Chevy.
Yeah, right. Yeah, how about a Dodge, baby? and there are some pink flowering varieties. One's called Cherokee Chief. One is called, Cherokee, Chief is a pink, mm-hmm. reddish pink flower.
They may have
one.
To change the name on that one.
They probably will. There'll be a demonstration right after the show here. and I told you about this one earlier. It's called Tricolor Dogwood.
Yeah.
And the leaves are creamy white, pink, and rose. All on the leaf. That's the color of the leaf. And they're green in the spring and the summer, and then in the fall the leaves turn deep red, rose, and all three of those colors have a different shade of red.
Oh.
Yeah, and some is light, some is dark. Yeah, it's a very attractive tree. But this one likes a shady spot to grow in, like morning sun, afternoon shade. So it doesn't, it's not really a shade tree. It can be, but it does better with a little partial shade. So, again, the dogwoods are in what I would call the medium size range and will fit nicely into the small yard. And most everyone thinks, I don't know how much time I got.
Well, 2 minutes.
Oh, 2 minutes. I am not going to get through this. I got three more pages of notes.
shuffle.
And we'll pick up on this point next week. But everyone thinks like Japanese maples are just small, decorative little trees. No, and there's a lot of them that are, that only get 4 or 5 feet tall.
Yeah.
And you'd have to get underneath, lay under it to get any shade. But there's many varieties that get tall enough to produce nice filtered shade. You know, they'll get up 35, 40 feet. You know, in time. They're not fast growers. I got several at the nursery, one at least 40 feet. And I planted it when it was 6-7 feet, you know, that kind of thing.
I didn't realize they grew that.
And that's why I have these different kinds of trees planted around the nursery, because when somebody comes and says, I want to see a Japanese maple. I said, well, what kind? Well, you know, I don't know, a Japanese maple. Well, this is a Japanese maple. And I'll show them a small weeping variety, and then I'll point to the 40-footer and say, and that is also a Japanese maple. And that blows their mind because they didn't think. There's 3,000 varieties of Japanese maple alone.
Isn't that something?
Yeah, it's crazy.
Wow.
And I've got the book with all it's called Japanese Maples of the Pacific. Pacific Northwest or something by J.D. Vertrees, who was like the super guy of Japanese maples years ago. But there are some Japanese maples that are 30, 35, 40 feet tall. I got two of them that are in the 30 to 40 foot range. And then I got some that are in the 12 to 15 foot range. And I planted all these different kinds so that people, as I walk them around, this is what this will do. Oh, yeah, I didn't know that. I'd like to have one of those. Or I just want the shorter varieties, you know. And so I've got miniatures that only grow 2 feet tall. That's it.
That is a big range.
Oh, yeah, a huge range. So, anyway, I'll get into the Japanese maples for shade trees next week. I don't have the time to really properly address the subject.
Got to do it right.
I know. And so we got a minute.
Oh, 10, 11, 15 seconds.
15 seconds. Well, I hope everybody enjoyed it. I hope you learned something. And I'm really hurt and crushed that you didn't call me and ask a lot of questions.
We got one call.
Yeah, we got one. But I expected 26 calls. What the heck?
Next week.
Thank you for listening.
All right. We'll catch you next week. Thank you, Mike.
You're welcome.
Where are you located in Winston there?
8580 Highway 99 South. All our roofs are green. You can't miss us. We're on the left-hand side of the road, about a quarter mile past the bridge.
All right. Be safe.
Thank you.
We had there, Mike. I know what I did.
What did you do?
I was thinking it was Tuesday, not Wednesday, so that was another 10 seconds.